No playing.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to D20 Dudes, a tabletop role-playing podcast where the die decides our topic. I am Dylan.
I'm Molly.
I'm Stacy Fake.
Oh, nice. Good to meet you, Stacy.
I'm tangentially aware of that joke. Yeah.
That's for all you.
Our whole podcast is basically just tangents.
Yeah, what was it? It was like something like 8 minutes.
Don't. Don't do it again.
What? Is this a threat? Can I get in on this?
No, you were part of it.
It hurt me on an emotional level.
There was a podcast. You're talking about vampire stuff, but the topic was about vampire stuff, and the first third of the podcast was not about vampire stuff.
I don't even remember. You're talking to someone whose memory just dumps itself at the end of every interaction I have. But just call me Ram.
So today we're going to talk about break.
In 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah. I have that pulled up in a browser still. So I never close it.
It is thanks to Zach here that... I'm sorry, Stacy. Stacy, fake name. It's thanks to Stacy here that we have this. Because this RPG is not fully out yet. It was kickstarted, and it reached its funding goal, and there is currently an early release PDF that the backers got, and because backers have gotten a digital file, it's propagated everywhere, as digital information tends to do.
They're also we're gonna talk looking about for that. Feedback on it, so you know, like they're, you know, they're aware of typos and stuff, but they're trying to make it better.
Mm-hmm. Our biggest feedback for them would be to please put bookmarks in your PDF. This is killing me.
Yeah, I haven't paid too much attention to the Kickstarter updates, but I think they had said something about having like a dual page version of the PDF so that you wouldn't have to look at it with just the one. So maybe that's something they'll add to it too.
It's currently dual page.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, that also kind of, like, I think it's interesting, but it also kind of sucks because they give page number references that are not accurate to the page that you're going to have in the PDF.
That's what we mean by, like, having bookmarks, because if they tell me to go to this page and I'm like, I can't jump there because each of the pages are, like, two pages at once, which looks really nice, right? But I can't jump anywhere, so I have to scroll.
I know this is a weird thing to nerd out about on a podcast, but if it's all two pages, would there not be like a mathematical, like whatever page number divided by two is where I go to? I mean, plus or minus.
And you would think that because it also adds in like a cover letter and a title page
and
before you even get to those pages. It's like,
and there's
it's a lot of like, we're just
going
to.
Table of contents. So I don't want to go through it and figure out the actual number of like content pages. I don't got time for that.
Yeah,
and also, I don't know if you noticed, we have the ads. I don't have the brain power to do that, man.
See, I've had I like the physical books, and anytime anybody comes up with like a wiki page that kind of has all that stuff, it's obviously like awesome. Mm-hmm. But I've had that issue with like, I think most digital content, because everybody puts like the like thing. This one just seems to be a little bit different because it not only does it have those prepended pages, but then also you've got like the dual page thing going on. So there's like one extra thing to track instead of the other stuff. So you'll be off by like four instead of off by like one or two.
But in terms of the game itself, it's cool. It's interesting. It's the only real negative I have to it is there's like just enough abstraction to battle maps and dungeon maps and stuff to make it so that you can't really do everything in like a theater of the mind way, but you don't get to really add a whole lot of detail to the maps either. It kind of puts you in this, with experience, it could be an interesting way to do maps and stuff, but currently, with my experience with the game, it's kind of an uncomfortable medium.
Yeah, so like you've read more on this than I have at this point. I just like the, I mean, it has very pretty art. I think Grey Wizard is the artist mm-hmm. that does all this mm-hmm. stuff. And he does like anime, like themed things. It's not from anime, but they make it look like it's from a show. I think somebody had talked about the art and it looks like panels that you might see from like an anime, and like they'll get like a top down shot.
I think is what they were going for.
Yeah. And so that's what kind of attracted me to it. And then the, like really the only mechanical thing that I saw that was like, ooh, that's interesting, was the health system, because they kind of use like a Legend of Zelda like heart system, and you know, like your class and your background, I forget exactly what the terms were, but there's like two things that can factor in, I think, your like what gives you your starting things, one of those being like your starting hit point pool, and like you use it in combat, and then when you're out of combat it like fully replenishes. And so like that, I don't know, I've always liked systems like that, because it's like a resource that you can strategically spend like per encounter, and it doesn't matter how many encounters there are, it's just like your hit points are a resource that you can like kind of reliably play with, and you know that you're going to get them back. So it takes some of the guesswork and can make the moment-to-moment stuff a little bit more intriguing, because it eliminates you having to worry about mystery later if that bumfuckles your brain like it does me sometimes.
It also completely eliminates the necessity for a party healer.
Yeah.
You really don't need that.
I don't think any of the classes really lend themselves to, like, they have, what is it called, Factotum? Is that the one? It's like basically Big Backpack Mommy is kind of that class.
Yeah.
And so I think you have stuff.
Yeah, Factotum and I believe Battle Princess can also in some way restore hearts. But like restoring hearts is very much like not a necessity, because again, after every combat, they're all just going to come back regardless of how heavily injured you actually were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what was the other thing? There was like a very like just flavor thing. I think it's like certain like spells and certain actions that you do, you like build up like either, I forget what the terms are, but it's essentially like good or evil points. And then once you get a certain amount, you like roll on a table and you get a thing. Like you might get horns, or your eyes might go like all black or something like that. No bonuses, no negatives associated with it. It's just like you have a thing now that you talk about. Like you grow a tail or whatever.
And that's actually something I really like about the system as a whole. Everything in the book. Like, so it's a very rules light system. For being a TTRPG, you only use one die for the whole game, and it's a d20. So everything in this game is mapped to a d20.
Mm-hmm.
And it uses that to great effect right out of the gate, because the first thing you see in this book is character creation. And what it suggests you do is everything being on a table mapped to a d20, it says, roll a d20 first, see what you get. If you don't like it, screw it. Pick something else.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives you that initial impetus of like, hey, if you're having a little bit of choice paralysis on like, what do I want to play? What sounds the most fun? Just roll a die. See what you get.
They also have like that for like NPCs and like towns and stuff. And I really like that, because like coming up with a character is hard. Coming up with a whole story sometimes when you're like, I don't care what they look like. I don't care what the town is like. I just want them to be able to do this thing. So they give you tools to just make stuff.
Yeah, and so you know, you talk about that where like sometimes the story is weird. I think the namesake of the thing, it's like Break with 2 exclamation points, I think, is the mm-hmm. the like proper yes. name. It's like the sun's broken. And so it's like it's in a fixed place. Your planet doesn't rotate, and so there are just like sections of the world that are stuck in like dawn, dusk, straight up night, morning, stuff like that. And there are like races that kind of like adapt to that. So like, you know, the races that are like really good in the dark, like they stay in the always night part of the world, but then you can like progress through the other things. And so that was kind of interesting. And a pretty big choice. I mean, like with all things RPG, I guess you could throw that out the window and not worry about it, but you know, that's a big one, you know, like that sets some things to be static for you. But you know, you can't be like, oh, But a dragon does this thing with like day and night. It's like, you kind of got to be in the right place at the, well, at the right place in order to be at night or during the day, if you go by like the base kind of story that they have. So I don't know, it's kind of interesting. I haven't really had to like play in the system, but I wonder how that will either help, you know, being like the bedrock from which to launch or to build your stories, or how much it would hinder in that. That's a pretty big story element that's kind of set in stone, unless you, you know, make like a pretty big, like, yeah, we're not going to do that.
It can be, let me tell you, we've run a couple sessions of it. It's an adjustment to not say things like in the morning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because that doesn't apply.
Mm-hmm.
It takes some time to like put that into your head and like really get it set solid. But it is very interesting world building. So there's a little like, here is what we know about the world's history section at the back of the book. I'm assuming you haven't read this, Zach.
Nope.
It is unhinged.
Okay.
I'm not gonna read it word for word, but here's a brief synopsis of everything we know. They call it the Outer Worlds. So there's the time before time when there was nothing, and God decided this is lame, so he created himself.
All right.
Then he created a big bubble, put a paradise in it, slapped it full of humans, and was like, that's pretty cool, and then promptly left forever.
Okay. I'm looking at this page, too.
So then, these kind of beings of pure potential. They're kind of like dream entities. They're kind of like, they don't exist, but they do exist and can influence things physically. They're called the Unshaped. They were like, we're going to go convince God's little brother, the Wondersmith, to turn the outside of this big bubble that God made into a planet. So the Wondersmith covered it in land and water and created the Sun Machine, which is literally a machine that replicates sunlight that at that point in time did rotate around the world and create a day-night cycle. And the Unshaped were like, dope, we're going to screw with everyone on this planet. Thus begins the first age, where one of these Unshaped decided for the fucking giggles he was going to join the humans and went to war with the other Unshaped and somehow won and forced the Unshaped into physical forms, and that's what elves are.
Oh.
Basically gods forced into physical forms, and they're super salty about it.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's really interesting. The only thing I knew about the elves before that is that the creator was like, yeah, we wanted them to be long.
They are very long.
They are.
So then begins the second age, where everyone's like, magic is cool, and we like it. So they discover that there's two alignments of magic, being bright and dark. And then because of magic, they start creating monsters, and now there's monsters everywhere. And the greatest of the wizards and magic users in the world declare themselves gods. That Unshaped, who fought against the other Unshaped, known as the First Hero, decided that's not gonna fly either. So he goes to war again, and they strike down these gods, but because they somehow attained some form of immortality / demigodhood, they could not be fully killed, so they got shoved off of the planet and placed behind a giant magic circle that is now in the sky called the Heaven Seal, which prevents them from re-entering the world.
Mm-hmm.
All right. How did
the Third Age?
Oh, okay. Still going.
Three big empires decide, hey, we're the biggest powers in the world now, and we're gonna take over everything and start going to war with each other. One of them is an empire of magic, one of them is an empire that is like sheer force of arms, and one of them is an empire of machines. And they're all trying to take the world away from each other. The First Hero decides, man, this shit really needs to stop. So he goes to war again. There's big fights, but this time the humans are fighting the other humans. So there's not really like a single like unified force that the First Hero is using. There's a big battle in the sky. One of the oldest dragons in the world is slain. The Sun Machine is broken and no longer works. By the way, the the way the first hero decided he was going to punish everyone for warring too much was by turning off the sun and saying, no more sun until you calm down. They managed to turn it back on, and then they broke it so it don't move no more, and they can't turn it back off. And then the first hero was mortally wounded. I believe two of the three empires end up collapsing. And now we're currently in the fourth age. Everything's broken.
Mm-hmm. They don't just say the sun is broken. The wording is shattered.
Like, everything's broken.
Right.
And people are trying to, like, eke out a living. Like, all of the old empires have basically fallen. The world is divided into generally four regions, being the Withering Dark, the Twilight Meridian, and the...
Blazing Garden. And then Blazing just Garden. Uncharted is the fourth, I guess.
No, the fourth one is the Buried Kingdoms. And that's, like, that's all the big stuff. There's, like, a whole bunch of weird stuff that happened kind of in there that doesn't really have, like, set points in the timeline where they happen. Like, at one point, a spaceship full of cat people just crash-landed on the planet, and now there's cat people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
These crazy, like, self-righteous, we're the chosen of the sun and we're going to save the world type dudes showed up, only to find out that they're probably lizard people, because if you cut off their arms or legs, they grow back, but with scales.
How do they explain the, like, isekai people?
That just happens.
Okay.
Cool. No one's sure why. But yeah, at any point, some person from our world can just, like, walk through a door wrong and end up in the outer world, or the outer worlds.
Is it canon that it is, like, our modern day, like, world, so, like, you could totally, yes, like, RP, yes, yourself, or, like, rage RP, yes, your friend? Okay, cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's totally real.
The outer world and is that, the back rooms.
And that in itself is a weird thing, because, like, you'll come through with, like, your smartphone or a tablet or your Nintendo Switch, which now permanently has full charge.
Mm-hmm. So convenient.
Extended functionalities that allow it to function as, like, a map and a compass and all this other stuff. Like, you get isekai'd in and your smartphone is now one of the most valuable artifacts in the world.
Mm-hmm. If not the most valuable artifact currently.
That's awesome. Have you seen the, was it the Pudge Rub? Have you seen that?
No.
So, I mean, it won't do any good for anybody listening, but it's on, I mean, so in the PDF page, there's two pages. There's page 96, which is, like, the readout of the Pudge Rub, and then page 90, which there's a food item that is really awesome once you, like, look at the actual, like, Pudge Rub thing. Under fighting, it just says nope for the Pudge Grub. It's just, it's God's little snack.
Oh, you're talking about the page in the PDF. I thought you meant, like, the page itself.
Yeah, the page 189 for the actual, like, stat block thing for it, but page 96 in the PDF, and then page 90. But it's
Pudge Grub.
Yeah.
They're dumb.
Yeah, they're...
They survived through frequent asexual division, so it's...
And so because they were talking about this when they were going through the development, so on page 90 at the actually page 177, but 90 in the PDF, at the bottom it has, like, the like food items, and so the first one is, like, a hot dog, but it's like a Pudge Grub on the bun covered in ketchup and mustard, and so it's meant to be, like, this little, like, cutesy joke creature kind of thing.
Bumbo pellets.
I think you'd like the Gobbo Pop.
It hits too close to home.
Goblins in Break are hilarious.
They are hilarious.
I mean, they're at always some point hilarious
during their life.
Yes,
they just, like, just a goblin pop splits off of that first one, and it's just like a head with legs. That's your son. So it's gonna follow you around now.
It just polyps.
What, and what's the other thing? Hold on.
The fact that they work on orc logic, where as long as they believe something works, it's gonna.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I like the Lumi slime lantern. The slime inside looks so sad in this picture.
So this is one of the, like, species things, and I think this is what you're referring to on the work logic. But it says, "Gobbo works. And so it says, you tell people you are a master inventor with a deep understanding of ancient technology. This is a lie. You are able to invent and hastily make tools and machines that only sound plausible to another goblin. For example, a grappling hook utilizing a monster sticky tongue or glue made from jam and spit. And then it has like guidelines for the things you can make. And so it says, your gobble works are limited to mechanical devices that move, propel, or contain. Made from scraps, scavenged from the immediate surroundings, assembled in under an hour without the need for specialist tools, can produce fire or even explosions if a suitable fuel or combustible is available. Ugly and noisy.
Here's a weird hypothesis. Would having one goblin in a party be better than having two? Because as they get smarter, then whatever they invent sounds less plausible, right?
Well,
They
then.
sound plausible to other goblins.
Yeah, but
By the
like if you had two and they had to sit there and like figure out if it was plausible,
but then you just
they're
like,
not gonna sit there and try and figure it out. They're just gonna
but
be like, yep, that
that's
makes
why I
sense.
said like if you had just one, then they wouldn't be able to bounce off of each other.
But you'll never, well, never is a strong word, but by the time that happens, you'll probably have sprouted your little goblin scamp, and then you
Oh,
can
that's
like
fair.
make them believe whatever you want. Because
This is my child. So I
yeah,
gave
be,
birth to my cat, too.
yeah, what does it say? So it says, so maturative ability. So at rank 6 or higher, you can, I guess, choose this instead of an advanced calling ability. And let me tell you, strong possibility that I'm gonna take this if I ever roll a goblin, because it's like at some point, at some unpredictable moment during your life, you will sprout another goblin. And it says you release a spore which rapidly evolves into a new goblin in under an hour. The new goblin has no memories and is your follower. They function like a goblin scamp, which I think scamps have like a special like stat block and stuff. And then it says this goblin does not count towards the two companions per player character restriction, which I think you can have. I've never messed with them, but like I always hear the term hirelings in Dungeons and Dragons, and so this seems like maybe this is something like that, but maybe. Written more than I do.
Pretty close to it, yeah. But there's like a lot of things that actually break that limit. It's like it suggests you have two per player at most because it just gets messy to keep track of all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
But then it's like your animal companion as a battle prince doesn't count towards it. The goblin scamp doesn't count towards it. Like certain animals that can just decide to bond with you randomly don't count towards it. It's like, yeah, two maximum, except in most circumstances, basically.
Yeah. So, I haven't got into it. What's like, are there, like typically with these types of games, I mean, obviously there's a combat component. So like I'm interested in what the combat's like, 'cause I think there's like it's not really like you're this many feet away from it. There's just like battle zones or something that you're in and something happens. But then in addition to the combat, like the role play aspect. So it's like what kind of checks are you doing for you to persuade somebody or something.
Have we
So
actually done
combat,
a combat yet? I can't
yeah,
remember.
you have.
Okay.
Remember you fought the Skellymans, which are their actual names,
Oh, and the slimes too. I remember
and
that.
the slimes, yes.
And I actually really enjoyed how we did role playing with the roles. I thought it was very intuitive. And so was combat.
So the roles in this game are interesting. So like we said earlier, it's wholly D20 based. The way that rolling changes between exploration slash role play and combat is an interesting one. So you have, based on your character creation, like your background and like your quirks and stuff, you have a set of stats that are might, deftness, grit, insight, and aura. And the higher they are, the better you are and like the more likely you are to succeed. Not because they give you bonuses like in D&D or in Pathfinder, but because the way that you generally succeed at something is you will roll the D20. And if the result on the D20 is lower than your stat, that's a success.
Oh, wow.
But then in combat, enemies have, or you and enemies have a defense value that is, again, largely based on your calling, plus any armor or anything like that you may have. And what you're trying to do is roll a D20 and get above their defense value. So you'll have things like bonuses, like you can get like a plus one or a plus two or like that kind of thing. And it specifies at a point in the book that this plus or minus is very relative to what it is you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're doing a contested role, for instance, like say two people are arm wrestling, so they make a contested might roll. The idea is you want to get below your might, but above their roll in order to win.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so that plus or minus, like that boon or whatever it is, that literally pushes it in whatever direction will be most beneficial to you,
mm-hmm.
and not a strict positive or negative.
Okay. And the reverse is true, right? To where it's like, like if it's negative, then it's whatever would be to a detriment to you.
Yeah, yes. It's just like pluses or minuses in whatever direction you need it to go to.
And
I think the most interesting thing about it is you don't even have to use the whole bonus.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yes. If a plus one is more beneficial to you than a plus two, but you have a plus two, you can stop at the plus one.
Oh, very cool. Sounds
like cheating.
Isn't it like
it's in the book?
I know it's not, but it sounds like it.
Don't they use something like similar to, like, it's not advantage, disadvantage. Like, I don't think you roll multiple dice, but aren't the bonuses like you're not doing a bunch of math to figure out what you have. Like, it's just like you could get like this bonus or like this better bonus, but then is that,
I think, wrong? Like,
yeah, I'll
if I remember correctly on my sheet, the sheets are super easy to fill out. I think usually the max for all of the numbers is like 10. And so basically you roll like on a 20, and so I don't know if there's any plus threes or plus fours that I've seen. We only have plus twos right now, but it's going to be like really basic arithmetic. No multiplication, just plus or minus. You're either going to get higher or lower than the number that they have. One of those two.
Gotcha.
That makes sense? Yeah.
Okay, so they're called edges and snags.
Mm-hmm.
An edge provides you with another chance to succeed, while a snag provides you with another chance to fail. If you have an edge, you roll twice and use the most favorable result.
Uh-oh.
If you have a snag, you roll twice and use the least favorable result.
Okay, so it's more... Okay, I was thinking the deal was there was like a numerical increase or decrease.
Then, yeah, on top of that, there's bonuses and penalties. There's a minor bonus.
Oh, sorry.
There's a minor bonus, which is a plus two, a major bonus, which is plus four, minor penalty, minus two, major penalty minus four, and they are capped at that.
Okay. And I think if you have like a minor penalty and a minor advantage, then they just cancel each other out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or if you had like a major advantage but a minor penalty, then that would culminate in a minor advantage.
Oh, yeah. And I'm looking at the aptitudes thing right now. The max is actually more than 10, but I don't think it's more than 20. So you can't do...
20 is the cap.
Yeah, 20 would be the cap, which means that you would have to roll like a 20 and then have like a couple of bonuses, and it shouldn't be more than say like 50 total. And people can do that math in their head.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, that was like, you know, like I've heard people call Pathfinder Mathfinder just because of like the way that they do bonuses over other stuff. I never had too big of an issue with that, but I do like there's some sensibility in kind of trimming the fat, as it were, so that you can like kind of keep in it and like just be like, okay, yeah, you get like a bonus or a penalty where you have the edges or snags or stuff like that. I don't know. To me, those things are inherently mechanical, but they have a flair to them that you can like factor into the role play. Like, I mean, you know, you do something really cool and it's like, you know what, I'm going to give you an edge for that. Or like, wow, that was dumb. Yeah, you're hitting a snag on that. Like, you jumped wrong. I don't know what that means. Like, go ahead and roll with disadvantage.
Mm-hmm. You jumped wrong.
I think it also helps speed up like players' turns, because if you're sitting there doing, you know, Mathfinder for like 20 minutes while everyone's like arguing about rules, no one wants to sit there and listen to that. It's so annoying. If the rules are like simpler and you don't have to think about the math of it the whole time, it allows you to just like continue into the role play a lot easier and stay in the moment.
Yeah, I think like the spells are pretty pared down, right? Like, I mean, there are more choices than you would have the ability to like learn everything of on a single character, but I think they have a bunch of
and they're pretty limited to the character type too. Like heretics and sages are your big casters, but the things that they do are very different.
Are the heretics the like summoner people?
Yeah, the heretic is a summoner. That's the character that I play, and there's like, I think there's like 10 or 11 creatures you can summon, but they're all extremely level dependent.
Like, but they're very flavored too, right? Yeah, like they have like a backstory. Like it's like, oh,
they all have a tale associated to them and like why they do what they do. It is really actually pretty funny.
Yeah, it's not really like funny. They put you on the spot.
Yeah, like it's not like the summoner and like the other games where it's like, oh, you have like this, souped up familiar that you can make it like a bear, but like it has like sexy bear legs or whatever, and it's like, I don't know what that means. And it's like, I don't know, man, it was in the book. And so it's like, okay, whatever. This one, like there's stuff to where it's like, yeah, you can do the role, and they might hate you after that or something. Like, I mean, you have to like, you can summon them, and then there's like another thing to where it's like, yeah, if you succeed this, I think there's like a dragon that'll like breathe fire on everything, and it's like, if you roll well, you're not affected. If you don't, the dragon will still breathe fire on everything, but you get hit too.
One of my favorites is like this giant Iron Man who was like all about justice and punishing the wicked, and if you summon him and you roll low so he doesn't like want to help, he'll just smack you and tell you to leave him alone.
That's true. Also, like the lowest summoning creature is like this guy where if you don't ask him nicely to come and help you, he'll just ignore you completely.
Yeah.
Yep. Pretty great.
He'll literally show up and just be like, no, and then leave.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just, stuff like that's really funny, and I don't know, I feel like that can get the creative juices flowing to like, I don't know that they have a guideline on how to homebrew something like that, but I mean, I feel like you could do it, and if you have those examples to lead on, you could come up with like a really interesting summon to like do stuff. And like some of them are pretty specific if I remember right, and so like you could even make like some like hee-hoo summons to like do. I mean, like you could flavor Mage Hand is one of those summons.
There is actually one that's a lot like Mage Hand, if I'm remembering it correctly. The one where you basically like make a astral projection of yourself. It's a very powerful summon.
Okay. And I think like some of the summons have like good and evil. Like and I think it goes beyond just summons. I think like there's a few spells that do it, but it's like if you use the spell, then you build those like good boy or bad boy points that let you like roll on the table to get a thing.
Yeah, you can get like horns or something if you're too evil. And you have to like do a couple of things.
There's also a lot of like weird hinting. There's like a lot of weird hinting that like gods and angels might just be lizards. Like one of the holy things you can get that points out that you are a good, holy, just person is just lizard scales.
I haven't poured into the book, but this is an angle that I've only just heard.
It's bonkers. So I think a good thing to kind of end off on will be kind of breezing through the generals of character creation, to get an idea of like how quick a character is to make and how fun it is. Because again, like all these things are on tables, so you can roll d20, see what you get. Don't like it, pick something else. But rolling on a table gets you very interesting characters, like Bonavento Mercato, for instance, who we will talk about at a later date. But I basically ended up rolling a war criminal Puss in Boots.
Okay.
It's pretty good. So the first thing you choose is your calling. There are 8 total callings, with a table mapped to a d20 so that you can pick them. But there's the factotum, who is kind of your utility. I can kind of do everything kind of person. They have a giant backpack and they can just kind of bullshit pulling things out that happens to be useful right in that moment.
I feel like that sets the stage for the whole thing too. Like I won't do this on like all the different classes, but for me the factotum was really interesting. That's the first class that they talk about in the book, and I think that might have been one of the first ones they showcased whenever they were talking about it. Like it's just kind of your like, again, like think anime, and it's just like your person who's always equipped, you know, they have a big backpack and like frying pans and like a rolling pin for whatever reason, and they just like pull crap out, they always have what they need. And so like that kind of sets the stage. And so like as you listen to some of the like next classes, they aren't, you know, they'll fill certain archetypes that you come to expect, but the names aren't really what you expect from a lot of other RPG systems.
Mm-hmm.
The next one on the list is the Sneak, which can be kind of a rogue, kind of like a party face, charismatic person, or maybe an evil alchemist, depending on how you choose to build out their abilities. Champion is your big smashy lad. They can either be weapon specialists or like grapplers. They can do all kinds of like really funny stuff in combat. Raiders are your speedy boys. They're good at using either long weapons or bows. You got the Battle Princess, which is your, I'm going to use the power of friendship to use paladin powers, and here is my magical girl accomplice spirit animal,
mm-hmm.
who only talks to me, but I can maybe ride them and do stuff. Then there's the Murder Princess, who is a battle princess, but instead of using the power of friendship to use their paladin magics, they use the power of I hate you to use murder magic, which I really like.
Mm-hmm. I just like that they made a murder hobo class.
They did. The Sage is, they're a wizard, and the spells in this game are very whimsical.
Yeah, they felt a little like, you've talked about Ryutama, right? Like, they felt in that vein. Like, I think they do a little bit more in this system than they did in Ryutama, but, like, it felt kind of like that.
Very useful cloud is a spell.
Yeah. Ryutama, yes.
There's an enemy called an annoying cloud, which is one of those who got loose and decided to be a dickhead.
That's cute.
And then the last one is the Heretic, which is literally you found a book or a scroll or something that has the name of all these bound entities in them, and so you can like say their names and ask them for help, and they can hopefully help but can decide not to.
I killed some random guy and stole his magical artifact, and now I summon Shuffle Knight. He stole a switch. I don't know if that was clear.
So after you choose your calling, you then pick a race. I don't know if that's what they call it.
Species.
There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 different species. The first is a native human, which is a human native to the Outer Worlds. You know, they kind of live this semi-medieval, semi-maybe industrial revolution, but also there's magic, and also there's like a biomechanical. Like, the level of technology from place to place varies incredibly wildly. Then there are the dimensional strays, which, as we mentioned, are humans isekai'd from our world,
mm-hmm.
who just happen to show up in this place for some reason. Chibs, which are tiny little anime baby people.
They're chibis.
Tenebrates, which are kind of dark elves. They have kind of dark bluish, purplish, grayish skin, pointed ears, red eyes. They're not really evil, but they tend to be untrusting of other people and take things very literally. Rhinecos, those cat people we mentioned earlier, which can run the gamut from the Nekomimi level, like Japan, I've got ears and tail, but I'm otherwise human, to full-on furry degenerate, where you're basically just a cat. Prometheans, which are the people we mentioned earlier, who they're big hulking humanoids. They look mostly human, but pointy ears and the sense of haughty superiority. Apparently they hatch from eggs, and if you cut off their body parts and it isn't immediately fatal, they can eventually regrow them, but they'll grow back with like scales and spines. Lizard features.
Something I think that's really interesting about them, I don't think you've talked about, I think it's Grune is next, but if you, they have a chart, yes, that compares the size, and the Prometheans are actually the tallest, even though the Grunes are like overall more bulky.
Grunes are bulkier. The Prometheans are very tall. They're meant to look imposing and powerful. I'm pretty sure they're like an engineered species in some way. But the Grune are kind of this game's equivalent of orcs, although they're not orky. As you would say, they're kind of big and brutish and a little bit slow.
They look,
but they're
more
not
like
mean or evil.
Yeah, they have like a physique that would like land somewhere between like orc and like a troll to me. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
they seem to like function as an orc, but they kind of look troll-like.
And there's goblins, which are goblins.
They did a good job at nailing Goblin.
Yeah, they're very quintessentially Goblin. Dwarves, which are pretty close to being the stereotypical dwarf, but it looks like they might be made somewhat out of rocks. Also, their ears and noses are weirdly pink.
Yeah.
Elves, which, as aforementioned, are unshaped, bound into physical form, mostly unwillingly. They are, in fact, very long, have very long pointy noses, long pointy ears. They're weird to look at. And then biomechanoids, which are robot people with varying levels of biomechanical things. Afterwards, there is traits. You will roll two positive traits, or again, pick if you don't want to roll, and one negative trait. And what this does is just adds a plus one or a minus one to one of your aptitudes. So you could roll and get plus one might, plus one deafness, or plus one insight, plus one aura, or even on certain rolls get like plus two insight or something. And then you'll just get a minus one to another trait. Kind of making it so that even if you have the same species and calling as another player, your stats aren't going to be identical. You're going to be a little bit different and can kind of tweak your build around what your strengths and weaknesses are going to be. And you get a quirk. Depending on your species, your quirks are going to change because of like what they are and the kind of places they can be. So there are the inheritor species, which are the Grun, the Chibs, the Humans, the Prometheans, the Rhinechos, and the Tenebrates. They can get spirit quirks, physiology quirks, or fate quirks. The Old World species are the Dwarves, Elves, and Goblins. They can get spirit quirks, physiology quirks, or eldritch quirks. And then the Biomechanoids, which can only get spirit quirks or robot quirks. And then on each of these lists, you can roll or pick which list you want to pick from. But then each one of these lists also has a table for you to roll on. Being anything from being unhinged and enjoying violence to just being significantly young for your race. And then after that, you just finish out the details. You add like the names, add like a description. You describe like what's your team like. Do you have a name? Do you have a motto? And then you will roll a D20 to determine how many coins you start with. And that's your starting money. Everybody gets an outfit and a standard weapon of choice. And then you can spend your money buying any additional gear you want, as long as it's within your price range.
You didn't talk about, I don't think, about the like languages, but I think, you know,
languages are bound to the race you are, I believe, the species.
That was,
or it might be the region you're from.
Yeah, because I think like you could be like a you could choose to be a race in a region that that race doesn't normally belong in, but you could do it if you wanted to. But they just, you know, your mileage may vary because you can, you know, GM it however you want. But the whenever they were talking about language, they of course have a common language, where they call it low speech, I think. But I think that to flavor it, they kind of say.
Well, to his merit, I did in fact skip a section, skip a step where you choose your homeland and your history. You can roll or pick to be either from the Wistful Dark, the Twilight Meridian, the Blazing Gardens, or the Buried Kingdom, which will determine what languages other than the common tongue that you speak. Being anything from like High Akinian, which is a language from the Dead Empire that has managed to survive, to the Glazian Code, which is like basically a language based on computer code, to the Creator Script, which is like basically the source code of the universe, and it can't be spoken out loud.
Oh.
And then you pick or roll for a history that determines like who you were in the past and what your starting gear is, which also gives purviews, which I believe like if you do something that is relevant to your purviews, you can get bonuses on the rolls, depending on GM discretion, of course. But since we have lost one of our co-hosts,
he's dead, Jim.
This will be a solid point to cut this one. Any final questions or thoughts, Malamus?
Not really. I'm excited to play another session. It's fun.
Pretty good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if you want to find us, facebook.com/d20dudes, twitter.com/d20dudes or @d20dudes on Twitter. If you want to hit us up there, we got a Discord link down in the description, and patreon.com/d20dudes if you would like to support us monetarily. It's $3 a month to get a shout out, like I'm going to give for Zam, for Word, for Jenny, and for Ken Thomas.
Nice.
The four patrons. The ever patrons. So let's roll the D20 and see what next week's episode is going to be. Why don't we? I have rolled. I have rolled a 9, Molly.
What is that?
Molly, 9 is a charisma check.
Against
do
what?
You know charisma check is?
We're talking about boobs?
No. Dinkus. Charisma check is an episode where we just talk about whatever the hell we want to talk about.
Oh.
Hey, co-host number 3, he is back.
Huzzah, number 3.
Listen, I'm 1, you're 2, he's 3.
I thought you were the host and then I'm a co-host.
Semantics.
Semantics. Okay, charisma semantics. Check. We talk about random stuff, like we do all the time.
Yes, whatever we feel like talking about. That will be
that's
next
fun.
Week's topic.
Mm-hmm.
So, thank you everyone for listening, and we will catch you in next week's Charisma Check. Farewell.
Farewell.
And this has been Stacey Great Name.